Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 126. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, straight from Death Mountain, the Goron Chief himself, Darunia. The holidays have been wreaking havoc with my recording schedule this week, especially where my co-hosts are concerned, so Darunia has stepped up to the plate to provide some insightful commentary for this week. Be that as it may, we are back once again to discuss the latest goings-on in the world of Nintendo. We have some game impressions, some news, some listener mail, and this week's big topic, which is the least played games on Switch and Nintendo 3DS. First, though, I'd like to discuss a couple of this week's new releases, starting with Zeo Drifter for the Switch. Published by Atui, formerly Renegade Kid, Zeo Drifter started life as a 3DS game that came out back in 2014, and it's best described as a Metroid Lite-style adventure. It has a simple graphical style but familiar run and shoot and explore gameplay, and I think it's an absolute blast. In true Metroid style, as you explore, you gain new abilities, including a submarine form that lets you go underwater, a speed boost, and perhaps most importantly, the ability to jump between the foreground and the background layers. With that ability, you can really see the game's 3DS roots because the effect was fantastic in stereoscopic 3D, but it's still a heck of a lot of fun on Switch. Another awesome feature of this game is that when you acquire weapon upgrades, you can allocate them however you see fit to one of the five aspects of your weapon: power, bullet size, firing rate, speed, and waveform. And you're free to customize your weapon however you like at any time. You aren't stuck with just one configuration. Like, you can go all in on power, but if you ever need a wave or a spread pad on your gun, you can just pause your game and reconfigure your weapon, which is something I always thought would be really, really cool with Samus and Metroid, like reallocating resources to, you know, your power or your speed or your defense or whatever. This isn't exactly that, but it's still cool to be able to reconfigure your weapon like that on the fly, more or less. Anyway, the game's a blast. It's only $10, and if you don't already have it on 3DS or Wii U, you should totally get it. My one complaint is that all the bosses are variants of the same monster, and I suppose the game is a little bit on the short side, but it feels like it's the right length for the price. So, again, this one comes highly recommended. Atui does good stuff, and this is my favorite game that they've made so far. I mean, Metroid Samus Returns was an excellent game, but it did add a lot of different twists to the formula. If you want something that is more true to Metroid's roots, you cannot go wrong with this game. I've also been continuing to play Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology on 3DS. First, I've got to say, the demo is huge. It's ridiculously huge. It includes the entire prologue and the first chapter, but because there are multiple timelines to experience, that's a lot bigger than it sounds. I put in more than 9 hours before I reached the end, and they didn't cut anything out for the sake of the demo, except their level maxes out at 20. It's probably the most extensive demo I've ever played. It's all in there. Of course, I did pick up the full game when it came out this week, and it was as easy as can be to transfer the save data to the full game. Just fire it up, and there it is. You can load any save data from the demo. No problem. Anyway, I'm really enjoying re-experiencing this game. The time travel aspect of the game is really interesting, but it's also got a lot of drama and political intrigue. It's definitely more Suikoden than Dragon Quest, if you know what I mean. I'm also now getting to experience the all-new alternate histories that are new to the Perfect Chronology version of this game, and although I haven't done a whole lot of that, they seem like they're going to be pretty cool. And, as I mentioned last week, it has a really unique strategic battle system that really keeps things interesting, keeps you on your toes. Naturally, I picked up the physical version of this game, so I got a little character sticker sheet and a 40-page art book included at no extra charge. The one thing about the game I'm kind of unsure of is that it does have a bunch of DLC. Considering this is a full-priced game and it's supposed to be the expanded, complete version of a previously released title, it's kind of odd that the only way to actually get everything, all the content, is to spend another $25 or so on DLC, but I guess that's just kind of the age we live in. I do find it kind of ironic that this game is coming out at the end of the 3DS's life cycle. The DS original came out at the end of that system's life cycle back in 2011, so I think a lot of people, you know, missed out on, overlooked it, and that could easily happen again with this version since a lot of people seem to only care about Switch and have kind of moved on from 3DS. Personally, I think that would be a mistake. My advice would be that if you are an RPG fan at all, do not pass this one up, especially if you missed it the first time around. I feel like there's some sort of joke about time travel and history repeating itself here, but I'm feeling too tired to attempt it. Let's move along now and discuss some news. First of all, we've got some cool Splatoon-related news coming out of Nintendo. Splatoon 2 has already sold nearly 5 million copies on the Switch, but Nintendo is hoping to sell even more by re-releasing the game as the Splatoon 2 Starter Edition on March 16th. It includes the game itself, a 100-page strategy guide, and a few sheets of stickers, and it'll sell for the original price point of $59.99. If you haven't picked up this game yet, and I confess, I haven't actually bought it yet myself, this seems like the perfect excuse to get it. Huh? Better yet, Nintendo has also revealed a couple of new Splatoon 2 amiibo.
Amiibo!
That's right, an off-the-hook 2-pack of Pearl and Marina is on the way at some undisclosed time later this year. Personally, I feel like it's long overdue. Ever since we first saw these characters, I had a hunch we were going to get them in amiibo form eventually, so I am as happy as a clam that it is indeed happening. They look great, they have tons of detail, they've got their trademark outfits on, as well as ink splat bases that match really well with the other Splatoon amiibo that are already available. The price for the 2-pack is $25, and obviously I'll be adding these to my collection for sure as soon as possible. In other news, even more digital Switch games are finding opportunities to be released in physical form. Last year on one of Nintendo's video presentations, we found out about Flipping Death, which is a puzzle platformer adventure game where you have to travel between the world of the living and the world of the dead and possess various characters and objects as you sort of fill in for Death while he's taking a vacation. The game is coming to the eShop in the very near future. However, we've also now found out from the folks at Rising Star Games that it's also going to be getting a physical release, and that is pretty darn cool in my opinion.
Oh.
Meanwhile, it looks like Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom is getting a physical release as well, courtesy of, strangely enough, Sega. Now, if you're not familiar with Monster Boy, this is a game that was funded on Kickstarter and has been a few years in the making, and it's been touted as the spiritual successor to the Wonder Boy franchise. In fact, the original creator of Wonder Boy is involved, and the game is looking pretty darn fantastic. But now Sega, the original publisher of Wonder Boy, is getting involved in this too, so this is suddenly becoming less and less of a spiritual successor and more of an official part of the Wonder Boy series. And that is totally fine by me. The game looks absolutely amazing, and if it's half as fun to play as it is to look at, it should be quite spectacular. Perhaps the best part of this announcement is that the game finally has a tentative release date of coming out this summer, so perhaps the long wait for this title is almost at an end. The last bit of news I wanted to mention is that Nintendo is finally doing something with My Nintendo and Switch. Nintendo has announced that starting early next month, when you buy a qualifying digital game for Switch, Wii U, or 3DS, or a physical game for Switch, you will earn gold points worth 5% of whatever you paid. So if you buy, say, a game for $60, you earn $3 worth of gold points, which you can then put towards a future purchase. Digital purchase, that is, on Switch, and that includes games or DLC. This is actually very similar to what Nintendo did with their Digital Deluxe program on Wii U, and I have no idea why it's taken them so long to roll out something similar on Switch, but it's about time. Darunia, what do you think of My Nintendo thus far? Exactly. Most of the My Nintendo rewards have been hot garbage, and it's crazy that there haven't been any Switch rewards up until now. This is definitely a step in the right direction. If there aren't a whole lot of strings attached and they don't limit what the qualifying purchases are, this could be pretty darn cool. Let's move along now and answer a bit of listener mail. This first one comes from the amazing Chris Godby via Twitter in response to last week's show. He writes, "Not to be that guy, but after the new Donk City Festival, talking to Pauline indicates that she not only recognizes Mario from back in the day, but she even says how being captured by DK changed her life, though she and Mario feel more like old friends now than they do potential lovers." Chris, thanks for that correction. I admit I missed that conversation in the game, so that's good to know. I still think it would have been nice if she'd acknowledged Mario a little bit earlier, you know, when they first met in Super Mario Odyssey. Personally, I ship her with Donkey Kong, and Candy Kong can go fall into a well and disappear forever. The next letter comes from a Mythbuster One, also via Twitter. He writes, "When will Switch surpass Sega Saturn's greatness? Will Fire Emblem Super NES games ever come to America? Why isn't the frog suit in Super Mario World? And all my other fave podcasts have coffee mugs. Do you all have one yet?" So let's take these questions one at a time, shall we? I don't know if he's joking about the Sega Saturn or not. Personally, I think the Saturn was severely underrated. I love Knights, I love Guardian Heroes, and I love many other titles. However, Switch already has more good original Sonic games than the Saturn ever did, so in that regard, the Switch has already surpassed the Saturn. And I imagine, as far as lifetime sales go, the Switch surpassed the Saturn quite a while ago. Personally, I would love to see some of the Saturn classics like Panzer Dragoon and Burning Rangers make a return or get sequels on Switch. As for Fire Emblem, Nintendo has been, you know, very slowly bringing back the classic Fire Emblem games in new forms. You know, we got Shadow Dragon way back when, and then we more recently got Fire Emblem Echoes on 3DS. So, you know, if they keep it up, I think eventually we will get to remakes of the Super NES Fire Emblem titles on modern hardware, and we'll finally get to see what we missed out on when it comes to those games. Why isn't the frog suit in Super Mario World? You know, I don't know if there's ever been an official explanation, but I'm going to guess that if Mario dressed like a frog in the game, Yoshi might have thought he looked delicious and would have eaten him.
No!
And no, we do not have a coffee mug or any other kind of merchandise because we are poor like hobos. But I don't think it would be too hard to do, so if anyone else is interested in something like this, drop us a line, let us know, who knows, maybe it could happen. Our last letter this week comes from our old friend Brian Booth, and he writes, "I'm surprised that in a show about video game couples you didn't mention any from Fire Emblem Awakening or Fire Emblem Fates. Is it because with so many options available, there are just too many from which to choose? Can you at least tell us who your preferred partner is for Setsuna since she's your favorite? I'm with you regarding Link's many loves. While there's a hint of something there between Link and Midna at the end of Twilight Princess, and Midna is my favorite companion of the series, followed closely by Spirit Tracks Zelda, Link's and Mipha's relationship is the most poignant, hands down. I somehow keep coming back to Shovel Knight, but I have to mention that two of my favorite video game couples come from the first two campaigns of that game. I love the loving camaraderie between Shovel Knight and Shield Knight, and the way their relationship is so central to the campaign's story. And while it's not as central to the Plague of Shadows campaign, the kindling relationship between Plague Knight and Mona is just so sweet, and it plays extremely well against Plague Knight's otherwise snarky devil-may-care attitude to the extent that it almost humanizes him." So to respond to this, I would say those are definitely some good video game couples there. You know, we couldn't include everything on our list last week, but those pairs from Shovel Knight are definitely worthy. As for Fire Emblem, yes, I left that off my list because there were so many options and it felt weird to single out one pair when there are so many viable options. And let me tell you, I spent a lot of time in those games trying to make good romantic matchups. If a pair's S-rank conversation didn't feel like a good romantic fit, I would just, you know, quit and reload my game and try out other pairings. But I ended up putting Setsuna with Kaze in Fire Emblem Fates because, you know, he seemed to really care about helping her out, and of course her penchant for falling into traps figured prominently into their conversations. Another Fire Emblem relationship I really like is Crom and Sumia in Fire Emblem Awakening, since their conversation often revolved around Pi, and she promised Crom Pi's morning, noon, and night. Although, I suppose now that I think about it, that could have been a euphemism for something else. And that takes care of this week's letters. Thanks to everyone who commented. We are always glad to hear your remarks. I think it's time to take a little intermission, so let's do just that, and then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, least played games on current Nintendo systems. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big, or maybe not so big, topic, which is least played games on current Nintendo systems, the Switch and the Nintendo 3DS. This topic came in as a suggestion from one of our listeners, so I thought, sure, why not? Let's try it out and see if anything amusing comes from it. Oi! And for the purposes of this topic, I'm only counting full games that I own. Not videos, not demos, not stuff I just borrowed to try out. So let's get into it, starting with the Nintendo 3DS. Oh! First off, coming in at number 5, we have Mega Man 7, which I apparently only played for 8 minutes. Why I only played it for 8 minutes? I don't know. That's like one, maybe two levels. Because I love Mega Man games, and I greatly enjoy Mega Man 7. I am going to buy it all over again when Mega Man Legacy Collection 2 hits Switch later this year. But yeah, as for why I played so little of it on 3DS, I couldn't really tell ya. Oi! Next, my number 4 least played 3DS game is Zen Pinball 3D, which I evidently played for only 7 minutes. Again, I don't know why it's so low, because Zen Pinball 3D is an excellent pinball game, and early in the 3DS's life, I would have considered it one of the best downloadable titles on the system. I think I must have spent most of my time with it on my work 3DS at NP or something like that, and then, you know, I probably just only played it on that system and not very much on my own personal hardware when I downloaded a copy. That's the only thing I can think of for that one, because it is a great game, and I know I've played it for much more than that overall. Then, coming in at number 3, we have an Ambassador GBA game, Metroid Fusion, which I only played for 3 freaking minutes, apparently. Yes, 3 minutes. I played the game all the way through to completion when it hit the Game Boy Advance, of course, and I played a good chunk of it again on Wii U, so I can't say why I barely played it all on 3DS, but apparently that is the case. And equally weird is my number 2 least played game, which is the original Metroid. Another fantastic game, an all-time classic, but I guess I had no reason to play it on 3DS for one reason or another. I must have just turned it on one time to, you know, type in the Justin Bailey password or something. I don't really know. And then, coming in at number 1, my number 1 least played game on the Nintendo 3DS, with only 1 minute of playtime, it says, we have Stretchmo. And honestly, I forgot that I even own Stretchmo, and I have no idea why I'd have only played it for 1 minute. I guess I grabbed it because it is, as they say, free to start, but then I gave up on it just as quickly. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of free-to-play pricing models, but 1 minute isn't nearly enough time to try out anything. You know, there's no way I could have played the included free puzzles. But there you go, my least played 3DS game, Stretchmo. I should at least give it the courtesy of playing the free content so I can decide for myself if I do want to pay for any of the extra puzzle packs. Moving along, then, to the Nintendo Switch. My number 5 least played game with around 2 hours of playtime is Snake Pass. Now, Snake Pass is a game that I really wanted to like. It has a unique concept and a fun soundtrack, and it was released early in Switch's life, so I was eager to play something that was new and different. But as much as I tried, I just couldn't really enjoy it. Pretty much all the other games I've talked about so far that were on 3DS, you know, they were good games, and I just played them for a very short time for, you know, whatever reason. But this is one where I just got so fed up with the controls. It just never clicked for me, and the more I played, the more frustrated I got. I think if I had played any more than 2 hours, I probably would have wound up, you know, tossing my Switch out a window. So, yeah, that one was a big disappointment for me. Next, at number 4 on Switch, we have Arcade Archives, Mario Brothers, which I only played for about an hour. What can I say? It's Mario Brothers. It is a classic. It's the game that introduces us to Luigi, but it's not a game I'm going to spend a lot of time with, especially since I have more fun playing the NES version, which I can play in, you know, numerous forms, in particular on the NES Classic. I love having the arcade version as a piece of Nintendo history. I love the fact that it's available, but I just don't see myself spending a ton of time on this one in the future. Then, at number 3, I have the Switch version of Axiom Verge. And that's kind of weird. I only played this one for about an hour as well. But, you know, Axiom Verge is fantastic. I love this game. It is an amazing Metroid-style adventure with some brilliant innovations, and I own it on 3 different systems. But I guess that's the problem. I've already beaten it. I've spent tons of time with the other versions of the game I have on other hardware. So instead of playing the game, I ended up, you know, spending more time with the included bonus content like the documentary and the soundtrack than I did actually playing the game on Switch. But I'm pretty sure I will get back to it and play through it to completion on Switch sooner or later. Oi! Moving on to number 2, I've got Blaster Master Zero, which again clocks in at only about an hour of playtime. This was another game that I liked a lot, but as a game that came out pretty close to the system's launch, it kind of fell by the wayside since I was so engrossed with The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I also recall kind of getting lost in the game since I couldn't figure out how to access the in-game map, or even if there was an in-game map. Regardless, the game was quite good from what I played, and I would very much like to get back to it eventually, especially since I now have the DLC characters like Shantae, and they look especially fun to play. Finally, my least played game on Nintendo Switch, listed as only being played for a little while, which I assume means less than an hour, is Arcade Archives Kid Nicky. I guess this one isn't too surprising since it only came out a couple weeks ago, and I really haven't had any time to dig into it just yet. But I have to admit, the high difficulty of the game did hit me by surprise, and I got pretty stuck on just the 3rd level the last time I tried playing it. So it remains to be seen how much of this one I'll actually end up playing. That wraps up this week's big, or perhaps not so big, topic, so I hope y'all found it a little bit amusing or insightful or something. If nothing else, it definitely proves 2 things: that a neglected game doesn't necessarily mean a bad game, and that I certainly have a few too many neglected games, especially on the 3DS. And with that, it's time to wrap up this week's episode. But, you know, before we go, I believe we do have time for one more thing, and of course, that would be a dramatic reading. This time, it's the advertisement from the back cover of the very first issue of Nintendo Power. You know what it means to play with power. To play powerful games with powerful graphics, and get powerful excitement. And with Nintendo, you also get the power of choice. Over 100 blockbuster titles to choose from, with fabulous future mega hits lining up right behind them. Sequels you'll want to experience for yourself, like Super Mario 2 and Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, because the plot has thickened for Mario and Link, and we've got the technology to keep you on your toes. You won't want to miss any of our upcoming licensee titles either. Look for the summer release of the latest arcade hits like Marble Madness and 1943. Or check out the high-stakes challenge of Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. And then in the fall, it's bigger and badder adventures with the infamous Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Be the first to experience the hottest hits for the NES. Choose your challenge and pull up to the start. Now you're playing with power. Well, that was quite an ad, wouldn't you say, Darunia? You know, that all actually sounded pretty convincing up until they started pushing Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I don't know. Maybe the game show adaptations weren't bad as those things go, but even back in 1988, it hardly seemed like those were the kinds of titles that Nintendo fans were, you know, lining up for and getting super excited about, you know? Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. Of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself and my fabulous co-host, Darunia, we will see you next time.